I'm just wondering, there are millions of Americans out there, as I'm sure you know, who are frankly terrified about what this America under President Trump will mean for them. Is there anything that you, as Speaker of the House, one of the leaders of the nation, want to say to them?
Sure. First of all, I hate it that people feel this way. And second of all, they should not. I think people should be rest assured. America is a pluralistic, inclusive country. It is, it has been, and it will continue to be. So I really think that people should put their minds at ease.
So Paul Ryan is white. And maybe, just maybe, maybe he believed the words that were coming out of his mouth at that time. But understand, those words are pretty easy to say, because Paul Ryan is white. Now he says that. People needn't worry. This is a pluralistic nation. Rest your heads. It's going to be fine. But even Paul Ryan himself didn't feel that way. Well, and here he is now. Now it's okay. Because it's a party over a country. And nothing else really matters. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out. Episode number 217. My name is Melvin. Thank you so much for being here. So I've had it out with more than a few lefties. Let's just call them Jill Stein people. And I talk about things in that context because that is when I notice the kind of change that we are dealing with now. Whenever I see a hair on fire article, and I don't get into a lot of commenting on social media, but I pop in every so often, I say something dumb, and then I get off of there. I don't stay for the conversation because it's like a text conversation, and not a lot is going to get done that way. You can't say much. You know, you just have this back and forth pissing match. You know, he gets to say what he, it doesn't work. I prefer conversations with folks. That's where I'm at. But I'll jump on to these social media platforms and I'll see a story. And someone will go, oh my God, can you believe that this is happening? You know, this awful thing Trump is doing. He's trying to start war with North Korea. You know, he's Joe Arpaio. He's pardoned Joe Arpaio. Can you believe it? You know, and all these terrible things. They go, oh my God, he's banning transgender people. Can you believe these? And I go, but what about her emails? And I do it just to be a dick because it's stunning to me that nobody saw this. Are you honestly surprised? David Duke endorsed a guy. Are you honestly surprised? The guy's a full-blown racist. Are you really surprised? And I'll have it out with these lefties. And I'll say, hey, this guy got swept into office using a lot of racism, and he's going to govern as an effing racist. And they go, no. Now, he got in there because he was talking about economic issues, and Democrats largely weren't. And there's a lot of truth to that. Because if you look at a lot of Hillary Clinton's ads, they did deal with, look how awful he is. You know, look how racist he is. And I go, yeah, okay. But I go, that's not going to hurt him. It's going to help him. Because I've always maintained, especially post-Katrina, just watching the way that whole thing went down, I believe I talked about that on last week's show, I've always maintained that America is as racist as it has ever been. The people that are against racism feel as though they can be more vocal, and they are. I mean, folks like myself. But America is as racist as it has ever been. It's just that racism went underground. Now that we have a white supremacist for president, well, now those people are finally coming out. And they're showing exactly who they always, always were. These folks weren't born yesterday or born prior to election. Of course, they would be able to vote. They wouldn't be 18. They're not all 18 people that turned 18 by the time they could vote. I mean, they're older folks. No, they're younger folks. They're older folks. And there's a lot more of them than you think. The headline: a new survey shows right-wing views continue to rise in prominence. And I don't think these are new. A frightening new poll, this according to Think Progress, has shown that 9% of Americans believe it's acceptable to hold white supremacist or neo-Nazi views. Now you go, 9%? Wait a minute. All of America, that's 100%. 9%? It's a pretty small number. Not when you think about it in terms of this. We are a country of over 300 million people. 307, 310 million, whatever it is. Over 300 million people. So what does that mean? Well, 9% comes out to roughly 30 million people. 30 million. And you go, 30 million, but that's still, no. But that's 30 million loud and proud, either white supremacists or people who are okay with white supremacy. Donald Trump won the election with just over 59 million votes. So 30% believe that it is either okay to be a white supremacist or they actually are a white supremacist. And that is an absolutely stunning number. Now, I talk about this in terms of racism all the time, because that is the thing that it clearly looks like. When you hear screaming about Mexicans, screaming about Asian people, screaming about African Americans, you know, you say, well, okay, it's clearly race. They clearly think that the white race is the better race. But let's say 30 million, let's just take that number, 30 million. 30 million people are white supremacists. They say they either are or believe it's okay to hold those kind of views. But let's just say, for number's sake, 30 million are white supremacists. Okay? Those 30 million people turned out and voted for one Donald Trump. Okay, but he won by just over 20 or 59 million votes. So that's 29 million other people that maybe don't lay claim to white supremacy, but still voted for a white supremacist. So, what gives there? This is where the truth really lies. And I hammer this every week on this microphone. There are folks that are honestly racist. There's no two ways about it. Honest to goodness, racists. Just believe that the white race is where it's at. I'm white. I don't think the white race is where it's at. I think being human is where it's at. And being human to your fellow humans. I know that sounds ridiculous. But if you really think about it, it's not. But I think for most folks that went ahead and voted for the Donald, voted for him on economic issues, and they were just willing to take the racism with the economic issue that they cared about because they want jobs.
Is income inequality a problem in this country? Is it a problem that Republicans want to address? It is. And frankly, the president's policies have made income inequality worse. All the regulations that are coming out of Washington make it more difficult for employers to hire more people. Chief amongst those, I would argue, is Obamacare. Which basically puts a penalty or a tax on employers for every new job they create.
So that was John Boehner talking when he was Speaker of the House, blaming the income inequality on all the regulations that Obama, you know, I can't remember the last time I've been taken down or robbed by a regulation. And I wasn't hurt by Obamacare. Now, to be fair, I wasn't on it, but some of the things that were in Obamacare did affect the health care that I currently get, but it wasn't bad. So I'm not entirely sure what the Republican Party is talking about when they say that the Democrat made income equality worse, when this particular president, along with all the other Republicans, have went ahead and hired, you know, bankers and all these other scumbags to work for his administration. I mean, filling the swamp at an alarming rate. The Republican Party has an idea. The Democrats, I'm going to say right now, they don't. They hate Trump, and that's great, but that's easy. What do the Democrats really want to do? The Democrats or the Republicans have some incredibly awful ideas, but they are super upfront about them. I'll tell you right to your face that they're just going to go ahead and, I mean, they're hiring bankers. And they're working on giving tax cuts to billionaires, and they're trying to strip you of your health care. And those are awful things that are not going to help you if you are a working person. But those things are pretty clear cut, and they're unapologetic about them. And they are telling you that you want those things. And what are the Democrats doing? They hate Trump, and they, if you let them in there, they've got a better way, a better plan, or whatever the hell it's called. It's so unmemorable, I can't even pull it out of my head right now. The better plan, the better whatever the flip it was called. I mean, they're not... What the Democrats need to do is to be unapologetically progressive. We believe there should be health care for everybody, and that you should not go broke to get that health care. There should be a comprehensive national health care system. Progressive. $15 an hour, that should be the bare minimum. It should go north of 15 pretty damn quick. Because even at $15 an hour, there is nowhere in America where you can afford to live and have any quality of life with that sort of thing. The wars. And the Democrats and Republicans are both guilty with respect to this. The wars. No more nation building. And if we're going to have a war, it needs to be paid for. It needs to be done out in the open, in the sunlight. We need to have a clear objective. And we need only go to war after all efforts, all honest efforts at diplomacy have been absolutely exhausted. Not since the Civil War has America fought a war on its own soil. But with few exceptions, we have been perpetually at war since that time. Always something, always going someplace else, and always doing the killing and looting outside of American sight. And I could go on. The Democrats need to be unapologetically progressive. Because here's the thing, the headline from The Guardian, and an opinion piece by Russ Feingold, former senator from Wisconsin. The Republican Party, how the Republican Party quietly does the bidding of white supremacists. It takes approximately 30 seconds to send a tweet, a half hour to draft and release a statement, and the shelf life of both is only marginally longer. We should not recommend the Republican Party elected officials who claim outrage on social media at Trump's remarks, often without daring to mention his name. The phony claimed outrage becomes dangerous if it convinces anyone that there is a distinction between Trump's aberrant comments and the Republican Party agenda. The Republicans don't have any great ideas, but they still need a constituency. And they've had no problem finding a constituency by using quiet dog whistle racism. Trump gave a speech in Arizona about a week ago. He said, they're trying to erase our history. They're trying to erase our culture. What is your history? And you know that we have books, right? What is your culture? Is your culture not American culture? So if we're taking down Confederate statues, whose culture are we erasing? This is one of those things that a lot of folks didn't get when he said it. Or if you're ignorant, it's something that might even sound somewhat reasonable. But it's not. When he says that, you can go on 4chan or Daily Stormer or any of these white supremacist platforms, and you will see them saying that over and over. They're trying to erase our history. They're trying to take our culture. Steve Bannon is out of the White House. Yes, but his influence remains. And I promise you, even though Breitbart is going on a tear against the Trump administration right now, Steve Bannon still has the president's ear. Stephen Miller still has the president's ear. You know, Jeff Beauregard Sessions, right? That white supremacist still has the president's ear. And the Republicans who are feigning outrage and claiming that, how could this happen? Racism is bad. We don't like the racism. But not call out the president himself. The reason they won't is because they too need the white supremacist voters. Paul Ryan needs white supremacist voters. Mitch McConnell needs white supremacist voters. My representative, Jamie Herrera Butler, needs white supremacist voters. You know, all of these, they all need, all these Republicans, they all need John McCain, Jeff Flake. They need white supremacist voters. So they're very wary about calling the president out by name. Now, I guess John McCain's a bad example because he's been one of the better ones. And he delivered one of the crushing votes against Trump Care. And that's good news. But for the vast majority of Republicans, they won't call him out because he's not just the commander in chief. He's not just the president of the United States. Donald J. Trump is now, in effect, the grand wizard of the KKK.
Here's what would work. And I was asked by an immigration open borders activist a couple of weeks ago how I would get all of the illegals here in the state of Iowa to leave. So you're going to call the police every time you find an illegal, or you're going to round them up and put them in detention centers? I said, no, you don't have to do any of that stuff. Well, you're going to invite them to leave the country and leave Iowa? Is it, well, sort of. Well, how are you going to do it, Michelson? You think you're so smart. How would you get thousands of illegals to leave Iowa? Well, I said, well, if I wanted to do that, I'd just put up some signs. Well, what would the sign say? I said, well, I'd put them on the end of the highway on western part of the interstate system, and I'd put them on the eastern side of the state, right there in the interstate system, and then the north on the Minnesota border, and on the south Kansas and in a Missouri border. And I would just say this: as of this date, whatever it's, we decide to do this, as of this date, 30. Maybe this is a totally arbitrary number. 30 to 60 days from now, anyone who is in the state of Iowa that is not here legally and cannot demonstrate their legal status to the satisfaction of the local and state authorities here in the state of Iowa become property of the state of Iowa. So if you are here without our permission and we've given you 2 months to leave, and you're still here, and we find that you're still here after we've given you the deadline to leave, then you become the property of the state of Iowa. And we have a job for you. And we start using compelled labor. The people who are here illegally would therefore be owned by the state and become an asset of the state rather than a liability. And we start inventing jobs for them to do.
Sounds like a clever idea, and maybe you could make it put it in action. But I think the fallout would be so significant. You know, I think
what would be the nature of the fallout?
Well, I think everybody would believe it sounds like slavery.
Well, what's wrong with slavery?
When white supremacists march in the streets and they scream their guts out about Jews and blacks and Asians and Mexicans and all the rest, that's poisonous. But I don't believe that it's effective. Racism is most effective when it sounds reasonable. That clip I just played is from a gentleman, and I use the term loosely, named Jan Michelson. And he said that on his radio show back during 2012. And just listen to the case that he made for slavery without ever calling it that. Until he was questioned by the caller, and then he goes, well, what's wrong with slavery? You know, you were owned by the state. You were compelled to work without compensation. You know, he wouldn't use slavery. Racism. Racism is most poisonous and most effective when it sounds reasonable.
Well, what's wrong with slavery?
The headline: the Border Patrol is trying to arrest undocumented immigrants fleeing Hurricane Harvey. So today is Sunday, 8/27. So what is that? August 27th. Clearly, I'm staring at a phone calendar because no one says today is 8/27. And as of now, Hurricane Harvey has been downgraded to a tropical depression. And this is the storm that hit the Texas border. They're anticipating up to 50 inches of rain when it's all over. A couple of things. It's always awful whenever these storms hit anywhere. I weep for my countrymen. And short of going there or giving money to the Red Cross, there's not a lot I can do. I don't send thoughts and prayers because it's absolutely meaningless. It doesn't do anything. If I can't be there, and if I can't give money to the Red Cross, thoughts and prayers don't mean anything. But when these things happen to my countrymen, no matter who they be, I ache. It's awful. These storms, which used to be 100-year storms, are becoming more and more frequent. You'd have to work pretty hard to find a place that was more anti-science than Texas. Well, maybe Florida, because their city council doesn't even, their governor, Rick Scott, said that you're not allowed to use the words climate change or global warming anymore when you're talking in Congress or when you're writing bills. You can't use those words anymore. So I guess there are other places, but Texas is certainly chief among them when it comes to this kind of thing. They've been fighting against the very idea that climate change even exists. And with the frequency of these storms coming along, when something like Harvey hits Texas, I have to say that there is at least some degree of poetic justice there. Now, it's not going to do any good because these guys will simply turn around and after their, you know, if their house wasn't blown over or they didn't die, they're going to turn around, they're going to thank God, and then they're going to vote Republican again, which is just going to make the storms worse. I suppose humans are destructive by nature. But one of the more disgusting things that I have heard or got to read about with respect to this hurricane. The headline, Border Patrol is trying to arrest undocumented immigrants fleeing Hurricane Harvey. The United States Border Patrol said it is not planning to close its roadside immigration checkpoints north of the Rio Grande Valley unless there is a danger to travelers or its agents. Border Patrol checkpoints will not be closed unless there is a danger to the safety of the traveling public and our agents. Border Patrol resources, including personnel and transportation, will be deployed on an as-needed basis to augment the efforts and capabilities of local response authorities, the agency said in a statement. Translation, if you are an illegal immigrant, you better stay inside your house because if you come outside, you're gonna get snapped up. That's it. These folks are going to be on patrol. Racism that is so pervasive. So there's your choice. You can come out of your home and try to flee the storm, or you can ride it out and die. And that's the choice that we have decided to leave folks with in a Christian nation.
Neo-Nazi alt-right and KKK couldn't be happier about the U.S. presidential election results. In Washington, D.C., over the weekend, more than 200 neo-Nazis celebrated the Republican Electoral College presidential victory by railing against Jews and quoting Nazi propaganda in the original German. Their message is that America belongs to white people. They finished with their arms outstretched in the Nazi salute amid shouts of Heil the People, Heil Victory.
The headline over at Politico, 1,503 Confederate symbols are on display across America. Most are in the South. 179 of them are in majority black counties. And there's a couple of maps over at Politico that are interesting, and this isn't a visual show, so I can't show them to you. More than 1,500 symbols of the Confederacy dot the U.S. countryside, according to an April 2016 review by the Southern Poverty Law Center, who's doing great work with this stuff. A political analysis found that 179, or nearly 12% of these symbols, are in counties with a majority black population, according to 2016 census data. 45 of those symbols are in counties with a black population of more than 70%. The majority of these symbols are dedicated between 1900 and 1920, when the South enacted Jim Crow laws aimed at resegregating society and discriminating against blacks. So, and then the rest of them were put up during the civil rights movement of the 60s. So, Jim Crow laws is when a lot of them went up. They want you to think that these things went up immediately after the Civil War, but they did not. They went up when Jim Crow laws were being implemented and when the civil rights struggle of the 60s was happening. And they say, no, you can't take them down because you're erasing history. Once again, books. Sean Hannity's written a few of them. Look them up. Books, they're everywhere. History, it's everywhere. Okay? We don't need these damn statues. But it's not about heritage. It's about hate. And it's not about information or education. It's about intimidation. And that's why these are there. These symbols are there in public. Confederate flags, Confederate generals. These are there to say to African American people, hey, don't get too uppity. This would be like Germany putting up Goebbels or Hitler. It's the same idea. And it just further illustrates how the Confederate flag is America's swastika.
We've had great peaceful protests the last 3 days. And what people don't understand is we're not here in like a, we understand Donald Trump is going to be president. You know, we're not here to stop the election results. We understand he's going to be president. What we're saying is that Portland has a unique opportunity to be a progressive model for what a progressive city in the United States could look like. And we need to accelerate towards that, knowing that Donald Trump is going to be president, so we can protect ourselves from those policies. So we have specific demands about our specific city of Portland. A lot of people are making it out to seem that we are only protesting against Donald Trump. What we are doing is protesting to gain leverage and energy so that we can help transform our city into the progressive model of what it could be. So last night there were people that took to the streets as well that were not sharing the same message as us, that were out doing destructive things. And we don't condone or support that at all. At the same time, I think it's important to understand, you know, Martin Luther King said a riot is the language of the unheard, and those people feel unheard, and instead of yelling at them and screaming at them for what they did, we need to talk about why they feel unheard, and I think that our organization is a great way to channel that. So we've started a GoFundMe page so that we can help the small and local businesses that were hurt by vandalism that occurred yesterday. And we have a volunteer page up right now where we're going to go out soon to start cleaning up our city from the violence and destruction that happened, because that's not what we're about and that's not what our movement is about.
So the clear enemy is white supremacists and Nazis. But the enemy that is being thrown at us right now is Antifa. Antifa. Let me say a few things about Antifa. Antifa means this: anti-fascist. I'm hearing a lot of complaints about how violent Antifa is. Antifa is not calling for the lynching of anybody. Antifa is not using ISIS tactics like driving a car into a crowd of people and killing them or injuring them. Antifa is not showing up with guns, you know, slung over their shoulders, pointed at people, any of that. Antifa's doing none of this stuff. But Antifa is being painted as the violent ones. That's insane. Antifa simply means anti-fascist. And it's an umbrella term. So Antifa, they're obviously leftists, okay? And so there's all kinds of leftists, you know? I mean, anywhere you are on the left side of the political spectrum, most of them are able to go underneath this umbrella. So no two Antifa are necessarily the same. There are a handful of Antifa, and we know this is true because we've seen the video of Richard Spencer getting punched. There are a few Antifa who believe in the idea of Nazi punching. I don't weep when a Nazi gets punched, but I'm also not promoting the punching of Nazis, nor am I going to carry out a Nazi punch myself. But when you're on the left, or what they're trying to rebrand is the alt-left, and there's no such thing as the alt-left. If there were such a thing as the alt-left, we'd be giving you healthcare and college and food and a place to live, because that's where we're at on the political spectrum. But they're trying to paint the left and trying to rebrand them as the alt-left, and saying that they're the problem. They're the violent ones. right? The ones without the guns, the ones that are not using cars to kill people, those are the violent ones. When you talk about violent Antifa, you're talking about what are referred to as anarchists or Black Bloc. And by the way, nobody likes those guys. That clip I played just a little bit ago, that was Greg McAlvey, the head of PDX Resistance. And they carry out a lot of peaceful protests. But the anarchists step in and they will take a trash can, set it on fire, and kick it down the street and then run around, right, with a black mask on. And everyone will see that footage because that's the interesting footage. The interesting footage is not of us peacefully protesting. The image that everybody gets hooked on is that one guy setting a plastic trash can on fire, throwing a road cone on top of it, and then running up the street with a black mask on. That becomes the image that everybody sees. If it bleeds, it leads. And then people go, oh, God, see that protest with the leftists setting things on fire? No! No, there were no things set on fire. There was a thing set on fire by an opportunist. And the same kind of misunderstanding or worse smear campaign is being carried out online. So this from the BBC. There's an image from a 2007 anti-violence, anti-domestic violence campaign, okay? And it's a close-up of a woman's face. The woman is a British actress, and her name is Anna Friel. And so good makeup artists went ahead and painted, you know, some bruises and cuts and other things on her face. And there are, of course, words on the public service ad about reporting domestic violence and all the rest. But so what the alt-right, what white supremacists have done to sort of counter the Antifa, who have been pretty effective against the white supremacists, is they've taken this image, which is a copyrighted image, by the way, and they've put an image of an Antifa flag in the upper right corner. And then they've made a meme out of it. And one image says, the words that are written across the picture says 53% of white women voted for Trump. So 53% of white women should look like this. And it's shared tons of times, thousands of times on social media by these white supremacist groups with the hashtag punch Nazis, make racists afraid again, and bash the fash. It's being shared initially by what look like Antifa pages. There's one in particular called Rock Mount Antifa, but it's not Antifa. And it's trying to smear Antifa and make Antifa look like they are the problem, not the white supremacists, that they are the problem. And there's this pervasive idea that Antifa are the violent ones, and it's taking all of the focus off the Nazis that are marching in our streets. And there's this belief that maybe Antifa is more violent.
Ezra, let me ask you about this. Have you talked with your reporters at Vox about how to properly cover the more racist elements of the alt-right?
I have, and this is tricky. So one, I want to say there has been a real uptick in hate that we see. So everybody at my organization has had anti-Semitic mail sent to our homes. People have had their addresses published online. You get friends and colleagues who are being photoshopped onto folks going into an oven in digital imagery. This has been, it's hard to cover also because it feels so personal to people, right? And it scares them. It's also a scary thing to cover because folks feel like it makes them into more of a target. As you say,
there's covering the alt-right, by covering the racist elements of this movement, it creates a target.
Yes, exactly. And as you say, the trick in covering this is, one, not to normalize it, and not to, but also not to make it overly broad. The videotape that The Atlantic caught is chilling, but it also isn't something that should be attached to all Trump supporters, not something that should be attached to Donald Trump.
So since there is a discussion going on about Antifa versus the alt-right, I went ahead and I went to Snopes. And Snopes is one of my favorite websites for this kind of thing. I used PolitiFact for a while, but they don't always get it right. They'll take things that are honestly flat out lies, and they'll say, half true. And I don't, and I'll read the article and I don't always understand how they get there. But Snopes has been pretty consistent for me. So Antifa and the alt-right, are they equally violent? This, according to Brian Levin, criminal justice professor at California State University at San Bernardino, who is an expert on hate groups, said ideology aside, street violence is generally increasing at political demonstrations as extremist groups are egged on by each other's words and actions. To be sure, there's a violent subsection of the Antifa, which is getting much more publicity and more prominent. And to say that they're not is just false. By the same token, there isn't a moral equivalency in philosophy. There is an escalating arms race with regard to extremists on different sides, on which I think the alt-right are now at the forefront. But he pointed out Antifa isn't as organized as the alt-right and doesn't have the access to channels of publicity and governmental influence that the alt-right does. The alt-right is far more organized and has a greater access to the political mainstream than their less organized cohorts on the hard left who do not enjoy or do not have the same structure or access into the political mainstream. Both are anti-establishment, socio-political entities that can radicalize constituents to violence, but the alt-right, just as an organism, is far larger, more sophisticated, and more able to participate in the political mainstream, particularly through messaging. Marilyn Mayo, the senior research fellow at the Anti-Defamation League Center on Extremism, said that their statistics show that radical leftists have been dramatically less likely to kill people than their counterparts on the opposite side of the political spectrum. Over the past decade, extremists of every stripe have killed 372 Americans. 74% of those killings were committed by right-wing extremists. Only 2% of those deaths were at the hands of left-wing extremists. According to Mayo, I don't want to give a moral equivalence to the two sides because one side is fighting against white supremacy. On the Antifa side, they've never murdered anyone, but there have been many murders done by white supremacists. So we have concern about that movement.
But just to mix quickly, Homeland Security and jobs. Why aren't we putting our military retirees on that border or in TSA? Get rid of all these heebie-jobbies they wear at TSA.
Well,
I've seen them myself.
I understand
we need
that.
The veterans back in there to take it. They've fought for this country and defended it. They'll still do it.
Okay.
Thank you.
You know, and we are looking at that.
One of the most infuriating things that I still hear is about the liberal media. There is no liberal media. When you can take a group that is openly racist and openly violent, that Cantwell guy in Virginia said, we are here to fight. This is the white supremacist guy who's the crying Nazi, is what he's known as now, because he made a crying Nazi video after he found out that there was a warrant for his arrest. But that guy said, we are here to fight. We are here to kill. I don't care how many I'm going to have to kill. He said that into the damn camera. And then they go, oh. Antifa, so violent. The liberal media. There's no such thing. So after Trump, after his response to Charlottesville, after his failure in leadership, and that's what it is. It's a failure in leadership. Donald Trump is the Republican Party. He's the head of the KKK, and he is the head of the Republican Party. He's not just your president. He's also a member. And here's where we're at now. The UN. And Republicans generally hate the UN. Because it's usually the UN that's telling us, don't go to war. Don't kill those people. Don't invade that country unnecessarily. And God, conservatives cannot stand that. But now the UN has issued a rare warning. Mind you, the word rare. Over the alarming racism in the U.S., this according to Al Jazeera. You're not going to read this on Fox News. UN human rights experts have called on the United States and its leadership to unequivocally and unconditionally condemn racist speech and crimes, warning that a failure to do so could further fuel violent incidents. The rare early warning and urgent action statement, which is reserved for serious situations, was issued by the UN Committee on the Elimination of Race Discrimination, CERD, this past Wednesday. It stopped short of criticizing U.S. President Donald Trump by name, much like the GOP has. In order for us, and I'm not quoting now, in order for us to make these messages more effective, we're gonna have to start going after the leader. You know, if you wanna kill the snake, you got to remove the head. I mean, well, I guess that's a terrible analogy. Plus, it sounds like I'm advocating killing the president. Here on The Fire You Can't Put Out, we do not advocate the killing of the president. If somebody killed the president, that would be absolutely terrible, even if they killed Donald J. Trump. You should not kill the president. All right, I think I've got my disclaimer. So CERD said it was disturbed by the failure at the highest political level of the U.S. to reject racist demonstrations. That failure could lead to fueling the proliferation of racist discourse and incidents in the United States, the statement said. We are alarmed by racist demonstrations with overly racist slogans, chants, and salutes by white nationalists, neo-Nazis, and the Ku Klux Klan promoting white supremacy and inciting racial discrimination and hatred. This according to Anastasia Crickley, who chairs the UN panel. The UN experts said the alleged perpetrators of the violence should be prosecuted, if convicted, punishment sanctions commensurate with the gravity of the crime. But the UN said it. So if you're a conservative, I understand most of y'all are going to say, who cares? But for the rest of us, this really is reaching that kind of level. Yeah, I'm screaming here on this mic, and I don't have the intention, the attention of an entire nation. But the UN has the attention of the world. But I suppose we're too busy watching the Kardashians.
Why do we hate?
We hate because we're taught to hate. We hate because we're ignorant. We are the product of ignorant people who have been taught an ignorant thing, which is that there are four or five different races. There are not four or five different races. There's only one race on the face of the earth, and we're all members of that race, the human race. But we have separated people into racists so that some of us can see ourselves as superior to the others. We thought it would work, I guess. It hasn't worked. It has been bad for everyone. But it's time to get over this business. There is no gene for racism. There's no gene for bigotry. You're not born a bigot. You have to learn to be a bigot. Anything you learn, you can unlearn. It's time to unlearn our bigotry. It's time to get over this thing, and we best get over it pretty soon. I'm an educator, and it is my business as an educator to lead people out of ignorance, the ignorance of thinking that you're better or worse than someone else because of the amount of a pigment in your skin. Pigmentation in your skin has nothing to do with intelligence or with your worth as a human being.
So these white supremacists, they're taking ancestry tests with things like Ancestry.com and 23andMe. What is known as genetic ancestry testing is now a really common thing. It's really accessible, and it's moderately priced. I think 23andMe is like $100, but if you really want to know what diseases you're predisposed for based on your DNA, you know, you want to know what your family history is like, your genealogy is like, you can, you know, $100. And these damn things are pretty accurate. I was listening to Clark Howard talk the other day, and he did both Ancestry.com and 23andMe, sent in for both, you know, on his own dime. You know, he doesn't take endorsements or handouts or any of that stuff. And he went ahead and sent in it, and he got results back from both. And there were subtle differences, but he goes, they really were almost exactly the same. So yeah, these things are pretty damn accurate. And the idea for white supremacists, and this is stunning to me, with respect to sports. Okay, and I was having this discussion with my wife this morning because I hear so many white supremacists talk about racial purity and how they're the best. We just had the Conor McGregor and Mayweather fight. And of course, obviously, Richard Spencer was rooting for Conor McGregor because he's white. And he goes, well, the white guy's going to win because racial superiority. And I said, it's stunning to me because if you look at a lot of our athletes, you look at most American sports, whether it be football, whether it be basketball, it's dominated by African Americans. So how are white supremacists or really anybody able to say white is a superior race? You know, you got your stronger, faster athletes. You know, well, they've just got gusto. No. There's clearly no superior, and it doesn't make blacks superior either. But it definitely doesn't make the white race superior. And so there's qualifiers going on the TV machine right now, and it's in the background. I'm reading, I'm doing notes, I'm doing wedding stuff and all this other crap. And I look up and I see they're doing this qualifier for the running around the track for the Olympics. And I noticed that, so there's ten guys on the track, and eight of them are African American. Well, no, I actually think they're African African. I'm so used to saying African American, you know. So they're really rail thin, and you know, very dark, darker than a lot of our Africans in America. And the eight guys are at the front of the pack, and the two white guys are in the back. And I go, how do white supremacists look at this kind of stuff? And she says, you know, with African Americans, perhaps slavery made them where they're at physically. You know, for all the horrors of slavery, maybe this is one of the things that came out of it for African Americans. Stronger, faster, all the rest of it, better to play sports. You know, and it's a strange thing to me for all these white supremacists, you know, especially the people, the racists who clearly love the Redskins, but then there's all these African Americans on the team and they, you know, they love being racist, but God, they sure like when their team wins. You know, all these black guys help the team win. My wife says, well, so the African Americans, you know, they've got from 300, 400 years of slavery, they've evolved into this. And I go, you can make that case for African-Americans, but what about African-Africans? I think these guys are actually from the continent of Africa. You know, they're carrying flags that are clearly foreign, you know, and I go, and, you know, they've got different facial structures and a darker skin. I go, so how do you explain that? And she goes, well, obviously that comes from being able to adapt to their own country, which is warm all the time and is wide open and isn't necessarily always civilized, so there's still a lot of wild animals. You know, they still do a lot of stuff outside. They don't, not in all parts of Africa, do they have the, you know, the things that we have that allow us to sit around and become fat, lazy Americans. Sorry, those are my words, no one else's. And I said, huh. So I don't believe that there's any sort of racial superiority. But just in the face of those sports figures, how are white supremacists able to say that they are supreme as white people? White supremacists have been taking these ancestry tests, these genetic ancestry tests, and a lot of them have been finding out that they are not so pure. They are not mostly European. There's a story here where one guy found out that he was 61% European and then the rest is made up of other things, you know, and he went on to one of these online forums and one of the guys says, hey, in the forum, he goes, if I prepare you a drink that is 61% water and the balance of it is cyanide, what you've got is a cup of cyanide. It's not a cup of water and you are not white. And so they're beginning to use this. So I think if all of them had to go in for ancestry testing, it would pretty easily kill this idea. And I am for, hell, maybe I'll start my own GoFundMe and I'll say, look, I want to raise enough money for every white supremacist in the nation, because these tests are $100. I want to raise enough money for every white supremacist in America, every Klans member in America, every white person that thinks that they are supreme. I'd like to raise enough money to where they can get this $100 test for free. Absolutely free, right? Provide you with the results. You don't got to give me all the results. You don't got to give me all your potential medical history and all that stuff. All I want from you, Mr. White Supremacist, Mr. Trump voter, whatever you are, all I want from you is to give me the section of that GAT where it says what percent European you are, so that we can, with science, knock down this horrible idea that what makes you better is the fact that you're white, or that you're European.
What do you think that these executives are afraid you're going to do to white America?
Probably stop some racism.
Stop racism?
Yeah. They're probably afraid of that, because then people don't hate each other. Then people start talking to each other, and then they start talking to each other, they find out who's the problem.
Which is?
Greedy people.
Greedy people. I have a couple things I want to ask you there. Do you really think that some of the guys that you dealt with at NBC, no names, right? There's lawsuits for that, too. That some of these guys really want to promote racism actively, or is it a subconscious?
I just think it's part of capitalism, is to promote racism, you know. Right? In order to make things work. If you feel better because you're white and you can get a job, you use that I mean, you know, I would.
Absolutely. Say,
I'm sorry, Jack. They say, I'm white. I'm going to use this.
Right. Absolutely.
Get this job. I'm hungry, you know. But and that separates people. So they keep people separated, and that keeps them from thinking about the real problem. That's as simple as I see it. Probably it's not that simple, but...
Now, all right, you and I are about the same age, right? We're in our mid-30s. How long is it going to take before guys who think like you, and I say guys who think like me, people who don't want to have racism in the country, people who don't want to be oppressing any minority, whatever it is, sexual, whatever minority, really get into positions of power and can change things?
You can't get in a position of power, it seems, if you think like that. It seems that the only time you get in a position of power is if you like the people that are in power. To me, I mean, that's the way it goes. I mean, people that get to become executives become like the people that were already executives.
I don't know, maybe...
They go in with good intentions, but it eats them up. It's like a cesspool, you know, it just gets on you and it starts eating.
The system levels them.
Pretty soon it's all gone.
Is that what a cesspool sounds like?
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
That's Richard Pryor back in 1976, one of my favorite people in the world. And Richard Pryor, I think African-Americans don't realize it, that when they use the N-word, they really do buy into that American idea about blacks being the lesser, because the N-word really was being thrown around with that intention, you know, making them second-class citizens. Making them feel like they are never, they don't belong here, that they're not really Americans. And the African-American community, I believe, has tried to take that word and make it their own. You know, they tried to repurpose it and all these, but that word still belongs to the white man. And it is still used to enslave you, if by no other means other than mentally. You are still mentally a slave because you continue to use that word. The white man's word. And Richard Pryor used to use that word. And then he had, and I remember, I cut the clip for the show, but I'm not going to be able to get to it today. We're running out of time. I remember watching a special, and he talked about how he used to use that word, so, and he used it all the time. And then he said, you know, he went and he used that word, and someone goes, hey, you know, that word, you know. Look around you. What do you see? You know, I see this. I see that. You know, with the, I see a woman. I see a man. I see some children playing. You know, all that. He starts naming people. And then the person talking with him goes, and I'm going to use the word. So if you don't want to hear it, just skip past for 10 seconds. And he goes, look around you. You can skip right now. 10 seconds ahead. Do you see any niggers? And he said, no. And then he had this moment. And he goes, and at that moment, I realized that we are not that. And I stopped seeing that. And he goes, and I stopped using that word. Never again in my life will I call anybody by that word. But a lot of white people, a lot of white supremacists still cling to this idea at the time that America really was the best when it was white.
Hi, I'm Kelly McCarthy from WRCB Channel 3 News. I'm here now with Rick Tyler, congressional candidate. Rick Tyler is the man behind the Make America White Again campaigns.
When I designed the Make America White Again billboard, it was specifically to engender in people's minds a thought process that would take them back to, let's say, the 1960s. I call it the Leave It to Beaver, Ozzie and Harriet, Mayberry America. And some might call it the Norman Rockwell America. I and many, many, many millions of others believe that that was a better America. We believe that it
million.
Was an America where you didn't have to lock your doors. You didn't have to worry about carjackings and home invasions. You didn't have to worry about Muslim sleeper cells down the street. You didn't have to worry about Islamic mosques radicalizing people. It was an America that was far superior to the America that we live in today. And, not coincidentally, it was an America whose demographic was 85% plus Caucasian.
The America that they believe in does not exist. It never existed. And all of these racial tensions, all of these, this racist language, all the stuff that turns us against one another, every bit of it is economic. And Richard Pryor said that in that previous clip. Every bit of it is economic. Whites are not better than blacks. Blacks are not better than whites. Asians and Jews. Nobody's better than anybody. As a race, you know, or as a religion, or any of this stuff. We all have a place here. and we all belong. And this idea that some of us are better than others, it doesn't come from us as working people. Yeah, as working people, a lot of us are willing to promote it, but it really doesn't come from us. It's purely economic. And it's economic because it's beneficial, to the United States Republican Party.
Let me put it this way. That from a very literal point of view, the harbors and the ports and the railroads of the country, the economy, especially of the southern states, could not conceivably be what it has become if they had not had, and do not still have indeed, and for so long, for many generations, cheap labor. I am stating very seriously, and this is not an overstatement, that I picked the cotton and I carried it to market and I built the railroads under someone else's whip for nothing. For nothing. The southern oligarchy, which has until today so much power in Washington, and therefore some power in the world, was created by my labor and my sweat, and the violation of my women, and the murder of my children. This, in the land of the free, and the home of the brave, and no one can challenge that statement. It is a matter of historical record.
The United States Republican Party does not have any good ideas, but the ideas that they have are quite clear, and every one of them is absolutely economic. I don't believe that Paul Ryan or any of the rest of these folks really believe in the idea of a white supremacist America, but they do believe in oligarchy. They do believe that if we simply hand over everything, if we hand over our money, and our daily lives and all the rest to a handful of very rich people at the top, that is where America will be better. That is where America will be more prosperous. And nothing makes a rich person richer than when they own American industries and they are able to cut their largest cost, which is indeed labor. And slavery does two things. It strips money out of our pockets, and puts more into their pockets at the top. But whether or not the United States Republican Party believes in this idea of white supremacy, or if it really is just economic for them, the effect is absolutely the same. When they coddle white nationalists, when they coddle white supremacists and the KKK, it says to them that their ideas have some validity, that their ideas are grounded in some kind of reason. And the effect is that we as Americans begin fighting, violently fighting one another for these ideas that have no footing in science and have absolutely no footing in reality. And while you and I fight over crumbs and about skin color, and about territory and language and all these other things, the United States Republican Party and its owners are robbing us blind. I've said it here before. I'll say it again. And I'll say it 1,000 more times on this microphone after this. Though race is what's being put in front of us as the great divider, the real divider is economic. And you, whether you're white, black, Asian, Jewish, Muslim, if you are a working class American, which is to say that you make less than $250,000 a year, your interests are in effect the same as my interests. Yeah, but you're a white supremacist and I'm Antifa. Yes, but we have the same economic interests. And the race and the religion, none of that stuff means absolutely anything. But it's ignorance that leads people to believe in racism to begin with. So it's going to be hard to get through to these people. But that doesn't make it an unworthy cause. We should still do it. We should still go forward with it. Because this is the way empires end. This is the way people die. And this is the way that we lose everything that we do not work for if we do not begin to see this for what it is. And that is an economic coup. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tficpo.podbean.com. Like us on facebook.com/tficpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or at the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes Store. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out. There you can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, or hate mail, just a general statement or inquiry, you can email us at tficpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us, and as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity and racism in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and special thanks to you for listening. This is Melvin, signing off, and now that I've woken you up, good morning.